And it is 4:30. You're tuned to Katie and Kay. This is Heart Song, following Whatever. I'm your host, Raleigh Burley, and this is a show about passionate people transforming challenges into opportunities. Today, we speak with Susie Krabacher, a Roaring Fork Valley resident who has dedicated her career to providing a safe and empowering space for orphan children in Haiti. Thank you so much for joining me on Katie and Kay. It's been about 10 years since the devastating earthquake of 2010 in Haiti. Could we begin our conversation, first by you introducing who you are and what you're doing, and then we'll work our way towards the anniversary.
Sure. Yes, so I'm Susie Krabacher. My husband Joe and I started Haiti Children Organization in 1994, well before the earthquake, and I'm thankful for that because I wouldn't have known where to start or where to go or how to help had I not had a lot of experience before that horrible, horrible day. We now, at this time, we've grown since the earthquake. It almost devastated our organization, but we persevered, and you know, with the Haitian, we have an incredible Haitian staff of 160 people. We take care of approximately 4,600 people every day in Haiti, in our medical clinics, our schools, our orphanages, our physical therapy centers, and our feeding programs and water programs. And everything that we operate is actually built and owned and operated solely by Haiti children.
So what was the impetus in 1994 to start the orphanage in Haiti?
Well, I grew up in rural Alabama and was severely abused as a child, and eventually the state put me in foster care. But there were so few foster homes in that part of Alabama, so I was really underserved as a little girl and kept being switched and switched and switched. And eventually they put me back in the home, this abusive home, and I ran away. But I, because of the abuse, I had such special needs that needed to be worked through, and I just felt so unwanted because of my special needs. And I promised God that if I survived this, that I would absolutely dedicate my life to helping other kids that no orphanages want, you know, no foster care situations are available. And unfortunately, my brother, who was also abused, killed himself. And I just knew this had to be at some point in my life where if I ever got to a point where I didn't have to make a living, that's how I would serve. You know, I would serve as a volunteer the rest of my life. And it turned out that Haiti was very inexpensive back then to do a lot in, and we had very little money. I sold a lot of our furniture in order to even go there the first time. And after I went there the first time, I'm like, you know, I can do this. I don't. I quit school when I was 15 because I had to make a living to support myself and my little brother, and didn't get to finish. So I wasn't a real likely candidate to be hired by another organization to do this kind of service work. So I just started my own, and it grew. 26 years later, I'm employing 160 people, and we're saving lives every day down there.
And so what was that first trip to Haiti like? Could you describe the feeling of arriving?
Oh, gosh, it was amazing because I really only went to think that, you know, maybe I would support another organization or maybe I would sponsor a few children, but the day I arrived, I asked, there were no taxis in Haiti, but I asked, you know, you can hire someone to drive you for $5. I said, please, would you take me to the poorest area of the city that no one is helping right now? So we ended up in Cité Soleil. Cité Soleil is a 27-mile slum with approximately 700,000 people, and very, very dangerous. I didn't know that at the time, but the UN had registered it under the hottest area, which is an orange level, one of the most difficult slums in the world. So he took me there, and I thought that he was going to stay and wait for me, being an American, thinking that's the way the taxi system works. Uh-huh. But he dropped me, and he left. I didn't have a way back. I was inside the slum. I ended up asking a family in that slum if I could sleep with them, because there were no cars in there. I slept the night with 17 people on a dirt floor, and the next morning I started, getting to know the people there and realizing, I said, is there a school? Because I'd like to visit a school. And they're like, no, there are no schools here in this part of Cité Soleil. I'm like, okay, that's something I can do. So I went to work immediately, trying to find, okay, do I need a license for a school, or a permit, and where would I hire teachers, and is there a building that we could start a school in? And I just stayed there for a month. And it is quite difficult to get licenses in Haiti, but we, thank God my husband's a lawyer, and he, sort of guided me in the language of the law of Haiti, how to do this legally. A lot of people make such huge mistakes. They start schools, they start orphanages without any permit, mm-hmm. any license, and that's, it will fail, because Haiti's pretty strict about that stuff, even though you think they might not notice. They are very, very strict. So we built that school, and we started building two other schools, which we have now. And then later I realized that there was not an orphanage for disabled children. So we became one of two in the country that take disabled children and put them through intense physical therapy if they're able, and we have a special school for them. Lots and lots of these children are abandoned in hospitals. So we're also starting programs to help families want to keep their disabled children, and creating roadmaps of how we can help them stay with their families.
How incredibly brave the way that this all began for you. So thank you for taking that risk and the initiative. And it's amazing what you've built, but not without some challenges. Major flood in 2004, and mm-hmm. as we mentioned, the 2010 mm-hmm. earthquake. So what has kept you motivated and through these challenges?
Our staff are really very much family now after 26 years. Once you get a job in Haiti, you never let it go. So because there's so few opportunities, a lot of our staff has been with us for decades, and I've watched them grow and become such incredible heroes. I just got, 10 minutes before this call, a video from one of our directors in Haiti. She was leaving to go get supplies for our kids, and one of her neighbors was shot. It was a nurse, and she ran back. I mean, this happened. This is a daily occurrence mm-hmm. there. I love Haiti, and I never want it to sound like Haiti is hopeless, but it is a very dangerous place, and our employees go through gang infested areas every day to get to work. It can sometimes take an hour to 5 hours for them to be able to, sometimes they have to go off of the main road and go through banana plantation fields to get off the beaten track where the gangs do hijack people and shoot them, and that's what happened this morning, apparently. But, you know, we have been there long enough that, for the most part, we give medical aid to anybody that needs it. And unfortunately, a lot of time the medical aid would go to someone who's had a bullet wound, and we don't ask questions. We just take care of them because we have a full-time medical staff and clinics. So I'm sure that we've treated some of our enemies, and for that, we get left alone a lot.
Wow. It's a complicated situation. I've met a lot of Haitian refugees who are now living in Chile. I was there last year.
Yeah. That's a big, there's a huge influx of Haitians going to Chile.
And you return once a year or more often?
Oh, no, I'm there every month.
You're there every month. Wow.
Yes.
And so what are conditions like most recently? Have you seen any of these situations worsen since the earthquake?
Well, I'm going back tomorrow. It's my monthly trip starts tomorrow. The political unrest was just, it upended the entire country. And the opposition to the government, because the opposition claim embezzlement from the president and the Haitian Senate Parliament. And there have been allegations that have been proven that this is true.
Mm-hmm.
So the opposition would like to replace the government. Now, that doesn't mean the opposition isn't corrupt as well, but they close the country down by hiring up to 5,000 people to stand in the street, block the roads, to put burning tires on the roads starting early in the morning. The schools, the banks, the markets, the hospitals have been closed now for 3 months. They're just starting to open up again. The U.S. has gotten involved by saying, you know, our aid to Haiti is going to be contingent on you having a fully operative government. So the schools have just started opening about 2 weeks ago. So my kids are back in school, thank the Lord. And we have, you know, our staff are pretty unbothered in coming to work every day. That was for a long time very, very difficult. And when I go, you know, we have, because we work in gang-infested areas, we don't, we're not naive. We do have armed security at all of our children's campuses because, you know, we have children to protect, and we have a lot of supplies that would be valuable. So we do have, we have 24-hour security. Most businesses in Haiti do. If you go to a grocery store, you're going to see armed security. It's just the way of life in Haiti.
Do you ever hesitate to return? You said you do a trip monthly. Is there ever pressure from friends and family that makes you think that maybe you don't want to go back?
You know, my husband is so invested in our children. We have 119 children right now that are still at our orphanage, and we have 100% guardianship of them, and they'll, you know, someday grow up and they'll get hopefully scholarships to go on to college. I have a few kids in college now. And there are kids, you know, so he is 100% always supportive of me going regardless of the situation because we have children there that we're raising and we're they're basically their family. But my friends, I get a lot of, you know, like, this is not the time for you to go. And I do respect that, but if I see that I'm not needed in Haiti, I am so ready to just step aside and get out of the way. And that's the way it should be. If you don't need to be going into a dangerous place and the people on the ground can do it without you, then it's ridiculous not to let them do it without you. But the reason that I go is that these are our children. And two, I want to encourage our staff that we're going to keep coming down here. We're going to keep listening to you. We're going to keep going back to the states and raising money for the needs to keep our physical therapy centers open, to keep our doctors able to treat the 10,000 people in the village, to keep the supporting the schools and the water wells and the nutrition programs. And we don't just, we're trying to really do a lot of capacity building with our employees and our children. Our children are, every year, six of them I take to Washington so that they can meet diplomats and talk to senators and congressmen and get comfortable with diplomacy, because I really believe that someday our kids will be the senators, presidents, ambassadors of Haiti. And then I intend to retire. I don't think that that's too far off in our future. They're very, very, very articulate. And even though a lot of our children have disabilities, actually 63 have disabilities, they can talk the paint off a wall when it comes to preaching, teaching. Because keep in mind, these kids don't have television. Mm-hmm. They study all the time. And our activities are doing speeches to each other and having debates and sometimes plays. So they're incredibly capable candidates for leadership posts in their country.
So what I'm hearing is beyond just giving these children a family and food and a home, which is extraordinary, you're also working actively to give them the tools to create the kind of change that might be positive in their country.
Absolutely. And they have, you know, a little bit, so let me just put it this way. They have nerves of steel because they have to, mm-hmm. because of where they live. We have on campus a pediatric psychologist because it's hard to grow up where you hear gunfire and you hear on the radio that just down the road a gang has, you know, shot an entire village. It's hard. So, you know, part of our care has to include psychiatric care, because keep in mind, every single one of these kids was left to die by someone they knew.
Mm-hmm. And have you seen any of the children go through the school, through the orphanage, and later in life turn around and work for the orphanage?
Well, that's one reason I'm so daggum excited on this trip, this current trip. I've got three of our kids who are now working at the orphanage, and I can't wait to talk to them and encourage them and have them be part of a staff meeting for the first time. I mean, they're going to be so proud to have their name tag and, you know, to actually be a Haiti Children employee mm-hmm. officially. And, you know, keep in mind, they're still continuing their education. It's a part-time position because education. And we have a family who provides full four-year scholarships for every child that qualifies for university.
Wow. And so in addition to these employees, and you said you have 119 children currently, but it's been 25-some years, you sure have a big family, Susie.
And no stretch marks, thank the Lord.
And although you mentioned your employees are all based in Haiti, you live here in Aspen.
Yep.
And so...
And we do have... We have three employees. I'm still, even though I'm the CEO, I'm a volunteer. I don't get paid. But we have three employees, two full-time in the Aspen area and one part-time in the Aspen area.
Are there other ways that you know, you have any exchange in the schools or any local families who have adopted kids from the orphanage? Any crossover?
We have, not locally, but we have had children adopted, especially during the earthquake. But I got to tell you, we have decided, Joe and I have decided that we're not doing any further adoptions unless it's a medical adoption where the child wouldn't survive in Haiti or a disability case. Mm-hmm. Because in Haiti, it is the most corrupt adoption system that I've ever witnessed. Wow. So Joe and I have decided to give them the very, 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 very best care in their country and to raise them there. And then if they can turn around and take the country, that country back under their control and start businesses and do business abroad, then it's much better than coming in and trying to rescue them and take them out of the country. And that's not the case in every child's life. It varies. But for the most part, we feel that the kids are just thriving. They're just becoming the most outstanding citizens. And sometimes I wonder, you know, if they would be the people they are if they'd grown up with some of the privileges, like, you know, being on their phones so often and, you know, being on video games so often. And we really don't have that option in Haiti. So their life is based around community with their brothers and sisters and relationships, deep relationships with our family there. So I can't say that they would be better off to be adopted.
So the goal is not necessarily to get them adopted, more to support them through their young life and give them the tools to be successful as adults in Haiti.
Exactly. Exactly. And to someday, you know, ensure that they, you know, we have some kids that will never be able to leave because of their disabilities. We have 23 children with severe cerebral palsy, and they're actually not children anymore. They're in their late teens and early 20s because I've had them since they were babies. But there's no sidewalks in Haiti, so even though they have wheelchairs, they wouldn't be able to go anywhere. And there's no facility in Haiti other than our therapy center that they can get the daily, you know, massage treatment and, you know, trying to keep their muscles from atrophying. And mm-hmm. on our campus, we have sidewalks so they can wheel themselves around. But just outside, there's no infrastructure for handicapped people. And we have some mentally ill children who were born with mental disabilities and some high-level functioning Down syndrome children, but yet in Haitian society, they're just not understood. So, you know, a lot of those kids will stay with us forever, and there are our Haiti children ambassadors, and they're like our ministering spirits. We love them so much, and they have the patience. I've never seen the kind of patience that these children have with us knucklehead adults sometimes.
Well, Susie Krabacher, thank you so much for sharing a bit of your story here with Katie and Kay. What's the best way for people to support your mission or to learn more?
Well, we appreciate so much that people would consider doing that, to consider supporting us. And HaitiChildren.org, that's our website, and that's H-A-I-T-I Children. .org. You know, we want people to know and be part of this. We have so many faithful supporters and prayer warriors in this valley. And if you want to do that, it just blesses us so much. And take a trip with us to Haiti. And I'm taking three Aspen people down tomorrow. So
oh, wow. Safe travels. And I wish you an excellent time with your family in Haiti. Thank you once again for joining us on Katie and Kay and for everything that you're doing to positively
change. Raleigh, thank you. Raleigh, I just really appreciate that you allowed me this opportunity.
Absolutely. Well, we look forward to speaking more with you in the future.
Thank you.
This has been Heart Song on KDNK. Stay tuned for the local news coming up next.